Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present St. Martin Episode 2, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 5, The Abolition of Slavery and the Aftermath. 1800 to 1863, the breaking of chains and the struggle for true freedom. For centuries, the island of St. Martin had been shaped by the hands of the enslaved, their labor fueling the plantations, their suffering hidden beneath the wealth of European settlers. They had tilled the soil, cut the cane, and built the fortunes of men who saw them only as property. But a storm was rising, and across the Caribbean, across the world, the tide of history was shifting. Slavery, the brutal machine that had bound millions in chains, was beginning to break. This was no act of kindness from the colonizers, no sudden awakening of morality. The system of enslavement had grown unsustainable, battered by uprisings, revolutions, economic shifts, and relentless abolitionist movements. The enslaved people had fought, with their bodies, their voices, their very existence, and though the struggle was long, victory was approaching. But freedom would not come easily. It would come through fire, through resistance, and through the blood of those who dared to demand their humanity. The aftershocks of the Haitian Revolution. The first great crack in the foundation of slavery came not from Europe, but from the enslaved themselves. In 1791, the island of Saint-Domingue, modern-day Haiti, exploded in revolution. The enslaved population rose up, led by men who had once been property but now held guns, machetes, and the fire of justice in their hearts. For over a decade, they waged the greatest slave revolt in history, defeating the French, Spanish, and British armies. And in 1804, Haiti became the first free black republic, proving to the world that the enslaved were not just capable of fighting back, they were capable of winning. The shockwaves of Haiti's victory rippled across the Caribbean. On St. Martin, the plantation owners shuddered. They feared the same fate would befall them, that their enslaved workers would one day rise with blades in their hands and fire in their eyes. They were right to be afraid. The revolts of the early 1800s. St. Martin had always been a land of quiet resistance. The enslaved found ways to undermine their oppressors through sabotage, escapes, and underground networks that kept the dream of freedom alive. But by the early 1800s, quiet resistance was no longer enough. In 1820, a plantation owner was found dead in the fields, his throat slit, his estate burning behind him. Though no one ever confessed, the whispers spread. The enslaved had begun to fight back, openly and without fear. By 1830, the Dutch and French colonists struggled to maintain order. The enslaved were growing bolder, more organized, using the hills and forests of St. Martin as their refuge, their battleground. The colonizers tightened their grip, increasing punishments, cracking down on rebellious behavior. But the more they squeezed, the closer their system came to collapse. The French abolition of 1848, the first breaking of chains. By the 1840s, the pressure to abolish slavery was mounting in Europe. France, still reeling from its own revolutions, faced an unrelenting abolitionist movement. Across the Caribbean, the cries of the enslaved could no longer be ignored. And so, on April 27, 1848, the French government officially abolished slavery in all its colonies. When the news reached the French side of St. Martin, the reaction was immediate. Some plantation owners fled, fearing retaliation. Some freed people simply walked away, leaving behind the fields where they had toiled for generations. Others celebrated in the streets, embracing one another, shouting prayers of gratitude to the heavens. But freedom was not absolute. Though the law declared them free, they had no land, no money, no real place in society. Many were forced to remain as indentured laborers, working under new contracts that kept them in near identical conditions to slavery. And worse still, on the Dutch side, slavery remained untouched. The Dutch side, the long road to abolition, 1863. While the French had abolished slavery in 1848, the Dutch planters of Sint Maarten refused to follow suit. To them, slavery was the lifeblood of their economy. Without it, they feared financial ruin, the collapse of their plantations, the loss of their power. The enslaved people on the Dutch side knew better. They knew that freedom existed just across the border, where their brothers and sisters had already been liberated. And so, many fled in the dead of night, slipping past patrols, crossing into the French territory to claim their freedom. The Dutch authorities tried to stop them. Punishments grew harsher, patrols increased, laws were tightened. But it was too late. Slavery was dying. Finally, after years of pressure, after watching other nations crumble under the weight of their brutality, the Netherlands reluctantly abolished slavery on July 1, 1863. But even then, there was a catch. Unlike the French abolition, which had been immediate, the Dutch imposed a 10-year transition period, forcing formerly enslaved people to continue working until 1873, a final insult, a desperate attempt to squeeze out whatever labor they could before letting go. But the people of Sint Maarten endured. They had waited hundreds of years for this moment. What was 10 more? Freedom, but not equality. With the abolition of slavery, Sint Maarten had stepped into a new era, but it was an era fraught with injustice and struggle. The formerly enslaved were free in name, but in reality they had nothing. No land. No wealth. No true independence. The plantation owners, though forced to release their slaves, still controlled the economy. They offered low wages, controlled the land, and used every method possible to maintain their dominance. And so, many of the freed people continued to work the fields, not as slaves, but as laborers trapped in a cycle of poverty. Yet, despite the hardships, there was a spirit that could not be broken. The people of Sint Maarten rebuilt their lives. They formed communities where the traditions of Africa, the Caribbean, and generations of resilience blended into a new cultural identity. They sang songs of liberation, songs once whispered in the dark, but now sung freely under the open sky. They told their children the stories of their ancestors, the stories of chains and suffering, of defiance and triumph. They knew that freedom had not been given. It had been fought for, suffered for, and ultimately won. And though their battle was far from over, they stood on the land not as slaves, not as property, but as people who had taken back what had always been theirs. Chapter 6: The Age of Maritime Trade and Smuggling. 1863 to 1914: Survival, Innovation, and the Underground Economy of Sint Maarten. The chains had been broken. Slavery was gone, a relic of a brutal past. But for the newly freed people of Sint Maarten, true freedom remained just out of reach. In the wake of abolition, the great sugar plantations that had once defined the island's economy began to decline, their wealth no longer sustained by free labor. The former enslavers, now plantation owners without workers, faced economic collapse, and many simply abandoned their estates, retreating to Europe or wealthier Caribbean colonies. For the freed people, this shift was both a crisis and an opportunity. They had spent generations working the land, but now, the land was theirs to claim, if they could survive the ruthless economy left behind. The question that defined this era was simple. How would the people of Sint Maarten sustain themselves in a world that had never been built for them? The answer lay in the sea. The decline of the plantation economy. By the late 1800s, sugar was no longer king. The great plantations of the Caribbean, once the lifeblood of European wealth, were falling apart. Technological advances in Europe, combined with new sources of sugar production in South America and Asia, made the once lucrative industry unprofitable. Sint Maarten was no exception. The plantations that once dominated the landscape stood in ruins, their fields overgrown, their mills silent. The newly freed people, now forced to find new means of survival, turned to the only resources still available to them. Fishing. The waters surrounding Sint Maarten were rich with fish, conch, and lobster. Many former slaves became fishermen, supplying food for their families and selling their catch to nearby islands. Small-scale farming. Without large plantations, people began to farm on a smaller scale, growing yams, cassava, and plantains to feed their families. Salt production. Sint Maarten's salt ponds, once worked under the whip of the Dutch and French, became one of the island's last valuable commodities. Those who had once been enslaved now sought to profit from what they had once been forced to produce. But these industries were not enough. The colonial powers still controlled trade, dictating who could buy, who could sell, and who would be left out of the market entirely. Taxes and restrictions placed on the people made financial independence nearly impossible. And so necessity gave birth to innovation. If the system would not allow them to prosper legally, the people of St. Martin would find another way. The rise of smuggling and the underground economy. From the moment the first European ships arrived in the Caribbean, trade had always existed beyond the bounds of law. But in the late 1800s, as colonial economies crumbled, smuggling became not just an act of defiance, but a way of life. St. Martin's location, situated between major colonial territories, yet small enough to avoid constant oversight, made it a perfect hub for clandestine trade. The island became a center for the movement of illegal goods, including salt smuggling. Salt was a precious commodity, and while European officials taxed it heavily, locals found ways to move it off the island secretly, trading with neighboring colonies. Rum running. The Caribbean had long been known for its high-quality rum, and St. Martin became a critical point in the illicit alcohol trade, particularly as certain islands imposed heavy restrictions. Tobacco and textiles. French, Dutch, and British territories each had different trade restrictions, allowing smugglers to buy goods in one colony and sell them illegally in another at a massive profit. At night, small boats would slip from hidden coves, carrying contraband to waiting buyers in Guadeloupe, Anguilla, and beyond. These operations were dangerous, but they were profitable, and for many families, they were the only way to survive. The smugglers of St. Martin, heroes or outlaws? To the colonial authorities, smugglers were criminals, men and women who defied the laws of the empire. They sent patrol ships to monitor the waters, imposing harsh punishments on those caught trading outside official channels. But to the people of St. Martin, these so-called criminals were legends. They were survivors, men and women who refused to accept the poverty imposed upon them. They were providers, ensuring that their communities had food, money, and goods when the government failed them. Some were simple fishermen who, when faced with an empty net, turned to trade instead. Some were former slaves, using the same boats that once carried their ancestors into bondage to now secure their people's future. Some were merchants, navigating between the French and Dutch halves of the island, playing both sides in a game that only the most clever could win. These were not the wealthy merchants of Europe, nor the pirates of legend. These were ordinary men and women who turned necessity into defiance, who found power not in gold or land, but in the ability to take control of their own fates. The arrival of steamships and the end of an era. As the 20th century approached, change once again came to the Caribbean. Steamships replaced sailing vessels, allowing faster and more efficient trade. Colonial governments cracked down on smuggling, increasing patrols, and punishing those caught with illicit goods. Economic policies shifted, slowly integrating St. Martin into the wider Caribbean trade networks, leaving less room for underground economies to flourish. By the early 1900s, the era of St. Martin's great smuggling rings was beginning to fade. The island, once a lawless hub of secret trade, was slowly being pulled into the modern colonial economy. But though the trade routes changed and the smugglers became fewer, their legacy lived on. The people of St. Martin had proven something vital. They would never be controlled by colonial power. Whether through legal trade, underground economies, or sheer resilience, they had built something that no empire could take from them. Independence of spirit. The transition to the 20th century, a new battle ahead. As the world entered the 1900s, St. Martin stood at the edge of transformation. The age of slavery was over. The age of plantations was over. The age of maritime smuggling was fading. But a new battle was on the horizon, the fight to define St. Martin's place in the modern world. With colonial rule still looming, with the shadow of European control still dictating the island's future, the people of St. Martin would soon face a new kind of struggle. A struggle not just for survival, but for identity, autonomy, and true self-determination. The 20th century had arrived, and St. Martin was ready for whatever came next. Chapter 7, War and Isolation. 1914 to 1945, the World Wars and St. Martin's struggle for survival. The 20th century arrived with great promises and greater uncertainties. The world was changing rapidly. Technology was advancing, empires were crumbling, and new conflicts were on the horizon. St. Martin, a small island in the vastness of the Caribbean, may have seemed distant from the great powers of Europe, but the fate of the world was not bound by geography. When World War I erupted in 1914, it sent shockwaves through the global economy, and the ripples reached even the shores of St. Martin. By the time World War II followed in 1939, the island's people had endured years of economic struggle, political neglect, and the looming presence of European colonial rule. Yet, through it all, the people of St. Martin did what they had always done. They survived. The impact of World War I, 1914 to 1918, the Silent War. When the Great War began in Europe, St. Martin was still under Dutch and French colonial rule. Though far removed from the trenches of France, Belgium, and Germany, the war had a devastating economic impact on the Caribbean. Trade routes were disrupted, leaving St. Martin isolated from the larger markets of the world. Imported goods became scarce, leading to food shortages and an increase in self-sufficient farming and fishing. The collapse of European economies meant less investment in the island, worsening its already fragile economy. The French and Dutch governments, consumed by the war effort, had little time for their colonies. Resources that once flowed into St. Martin were redirected to Europe, and the island was left to fend for itself. For many St. Martiners, the war was a distant conflict, yet its effects were deeply personal. Young men from French St. Martin were conscripted into the French military, sent across the ocean to fight a war they did not start and did not understand. Many never returned. When the war finally ended in 1918, Europe was left in ruins, but for St. Martin, there was no great victory, no celebration. Only a slow return to the same struggles of survival. The interwar years, 1918 to 1939, a period of hardship and resilience. The decades following World War I were marked by economic instability and neglect. The plantation economy was long gone, and with no clear industry to replace it, unemployment and poverty grew. The global economic crash of 1929, known as the Great Depression, reached the Caribbean, making it even harder for St. Martiners to find work and trade opportunities. Colonial rule remained unchanged, with France and the Netherlands continuing to control the island without offering its people real political or economic independence. Despite these challenges, the people of St. Martin endured. They continued to rely on fishing, farming, and small-scale trade, using their ingenuity to survive. Some turned to migrating to nearby islands, seeking work in larger colonies where the economy was more stable. Others clung to their traditions, holding on to community, music, and faith as the anchors that kept them afloat in an uncertain world. Little did they know, an even greater storm was coming. World War II, 1939 to 1945, a global war with local consequences. When World War II began in 1939, the world was once again plunged into chaos. The war was different from the first, more destructive, more brutal, more far-reaching. For St. Martin, the war brought a new level of hardship and danger. European trade collapsed once again, cutting the island off from critical supplies. German U-boats patrolled the Caribbean, attacking cargo ships and creating a new threat in the waters that had once been the island's lifeline. The island's young men were again conscripted into the French military, leaving families behind with little means of support. But there was one major difference between this war and the last. In 1940, Nazi Germany invaded France. Suddenly, the French half of St. Martin was under the rule of the pro-Nazi Vichy government, while the Dutch side remained neutral, as the Netherlands had also fallen to Germany. The island was now divided not just by colonial rule, but by war itself. The underground resistance and smuggling for survival. With France and the Netherlands occupied by Germany, St. Martin was cut off from supplies, leadership, and protection. But the people of St. Martin had not survived centuries of oppression just to accept another form of hardship. They found ways to resist. Smuggling networks returned, this time not just for economic survival, but for war efforts, helping to supply food, medicine, and information to Allied forces in the region. Radio communication became a secret weapon, with messages passed between islands, warning of German naval activity. French St. Martiners secretly supported the Free French movement, aligning with Charles de Gaulle's government in exile, determined to overthrow the Vichy regime. The island, despite its small size, had become part of a larger war effort, showing once again that even the smallest places can play a role in the grand battles of history. The end of the war and the beginning of change. In 1944, the tide of war turned. The Allied forces, led by the United States, Britain, and Free France, began to liberate Europe. By 1945, Germany had fallen, and France was free once more. For St. Martin, the war's end meant more than just relief. It meant the beginning of a new era. The French and Dutch governments were weakened by the war, making them more open to change in their colonies. The people of St. Martin, having fought and struggled through two global wars, began to demand more rights, more independence, and more control over their own future. The world was no longer the same. The old colonial systems were beginning to crumble, and for the first time in centuries, there was hope for something new. Yet, even as the world moved forward, St. Martin was left with scars of war and years of hardship to recover from. The economy was still fragile, opportunities were still limited, and colonial rule was far from over. But change was coming, and the people of St. Martin would not wait for it, they would claim it. Chapter 8: The Rise of Tourism and Economic Shifts. 1945 to 1970. The transformation of St. Martin into a Caribbean destination. The world had been broken by war, and as the dust settled over Europe and beyond, the people of St. Martin stood at the edge of a new era. The island had survived slavery, colonial oppression, economic neglect, and global conflict, but survival was not enough. For the first time in centuries, a question loomed over St. Martin's future. What comes next? The war had changed everything. The great European empires that once ruled the world were weakened, struggling to hold on to their colonies. The global economy was shifting, and the world's wealth and power were no longer solely concentrated in Europe. For St. Martin, this was an opportunity, one that would reshape the island forever. A colonial island in a changing world. In the years following World War II, European colonial rule began to collapse across the world. Nations in Africa, Asia, and the Caribbean were fighting for independence, demanding self-rule and economic autonomy. In 1946, France officially changed the status of its Caribbean colonies, turning them into overseas departments, meaning French St. Martin was now more directly linked to France than before. The Netherlands, meanwhile, reorganized its Caribbean territories in 1954, granting greater autonomy to its colonies, including the Dutch side of St. Martin. Though these changes did not bring full independence, they signaled a shift, one that gave the people of St. Martin more control over their affairs, their governance, and their future. But self-governance was only one part of the equation. The real transformation of St. Martin in the post-war years would not come from politics. It would come from tourism, the decline of traditional industries. Before the war, St. Martin's economy had revolved around salt, fishing, and small-scale agriculture. But by the 1950s, these industries were dying. The global salt trade had modernized, and St. Martin's once-prized salt ponds were no longer competitive with larger, industrialized salt producers. Fishing remained a livelihood, but it could not sustain the entire population. Sugar plantations had long been abandoned, leaving few alternatives for employment. With few industries left, many young people left the island in search of work, migrating to Guadeloupe, Martinique, or even France and the Netherlands. The island's leaders knew something had to change. If St. Martin was to survive, it needed a new economy, one that could bring wealth, jobs, and opportunity to its people. And then the world came to them. The birth of the tourism industry. By the 1950s, the Caribbean was becoming one of the most desired destinations for travelers from North America and Europe. The region's warm climate, white sandy beaches, and crystal clear waters attracted visitors eager to escape the cold winters of the north. And St. Martin, with its natural beauty and strategic location, was perfectly positioned to take advantage of this new trend. But there was a problem. The island had no infrastructure for tourism. There were no major hotels, no proper airports, no roads to connect the beaches to the towns. The economy was still based on traditional industries, with little knowledge of the tourism sector. The people of St. Martin had to adapt to a new way of life, transitioning from farmers and fishermen to service workers, business owners, and hospitality professionals. It was a massive shift, but it was one that St. Martiners embraced. The arrival of the first tourists. By the late 1950s and early 1960s, the first waves of American and European tourists began arriving in St. Martin. They came on small planes, private boats, and cruise ships, drawn by the island's untouched beauty. Seeing the potential for economic growth, both the French and Dutch governments began investing in tourism infrastructure. In 1943, Princess Juliana International Airport was built on the Dutch side, allowing the island to receive commercial flights for the first time. New hotels were constructed, beginning with small family-owned guesthouses and later expanding into luxury resorts. The local population began working in tourism, learning new skills in hospitality, tour guiding, and entertainment. The transformation of daily life. For the people of St. Martin, the rise of tourism changed everything. New jobs were created, giving young people an alternative to migrating abroad. Foreign businesses and investors arrived, bringing opportunity, but also competition and economic inequality. Traditional industries declined as fewer people worked in fishing, farming, and salt production, choosing instead to enter the service sector. Cultural identity began to evolve as the island became more exposed to foreign influences, wealth, and Western commercialism. Some saw this transformation as a blessing, a chance for St. Martin to thrive in the modern world. Others saw it as a curse, fearing that rapid development would erode the island's traditions and turn it into just another tourist playground. The dual nation dynamic, a unique tourist experience. One of the most unique aspects of St. Martin's development as a tourist destination was its dual nationality. On the Dutch side, tourism developed quickly and aggressively, with a focus on casinos, nightlife, and duty-free shopping. The Dutch government encouraged large-scale foreign investment, turning Philipsburg into a bustling commercial hub. On the French side, development was more controlled, with an emphasis on cultural tourism, fine dining, and luxury experiences. Marigot retained its European charm, attracting high-end travelers seeking a refined experience. This contrast between the two sides became one of St. Martin's greatest tourist attractions. A single island offering two distinct cultures, two economies, and two experiences in one destination. The challenges of rapid growth. But with success came challenges. Environmental concerns grew as tourism expanded, leading to debates over land development, deforestation, and pollution. Economic inequality widened as foreign investors profited more than local businesses. Cultural identity was at risk as modernization threatened to erase traditions, languages, and ways of life. Despite these challenges, tourism was unstoppable. By the 1970s, St. Martin had firmly established itself as a premier Caribbean destination, drawing visitors from across the world. But the island was still at the mercy of the global economy, and in the years ahead, it would face economic crises, natural disasters, and new struggles for autonomy. For now, however, one thing was certain. St. Martin had entered a new era, one where its future would no longer be defined by colonial rule alone, but by its own choices, challenges, and resilience.